Laughing Eyes Kennel presents The Gypsy Musher with Iditarod and Yukon Quest veteran Hugh Neff. The Gypsy Musher will share stories from the trail, fortune-telling, and memories of mushing years past. Follow The Gypsy Musher on Twitter and visit our website at gypsymusher.com.
Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Robert Forto, hosting from Willow, Alaska, and on the line from his truck, calling in to talk about this year's Yukon Quest and the lead up to Iditarod. It is the Gypsy Musher himself, Hugh Neff. Hugh, how's it going?
How you doing, buddy? Robert, it's 32 degrees here in Fairbanks, and I think folks around the world who don't live in Alaska realize that we've got some pretty interesting weather this year. Seems like every year it's getting more interesting. And for me, you know, I just got off the trail doing the quest, and many of us mushers that race so much, we actually like to be on the trail because, you know what, it gives us a break from our hectic, simple mushing lives. People have no idea. We're usually running around in circles most of the time, just trying to make sure we're able to do what we're doing on the trail. A lot of preparation goes into these races. Right now I'm heading over to finish up my blood work and testing for the Iditarod that is being done at the one of the local veterinary clinics here in Fairbanks.
So can you tell us about that, Hugh? I know that's a requirement for Iditarod. What are they looking for when they do the blood work and the EKG test? And what allows a dog to go on and what would hold a dog back?
I would say murmurs, low cell counts on the head vet, Stu Nelson, will receive the package, and then before the race, Stu will go up to each musher and go over their numbers and let them know if the dogs that they want to use in the team fall into the proper category and aren't above or below the numbers that he's looking to see. It's interesting, though, with the Iditarod, being so close to the quest, the numbers for the quest dogs are typically a little bit off compared to your average Iditarod dogs that have been sitting around not being run as much. That being said, if you looked at the quest this year, I mean, most of the top teams all were people that are doing both races.
Right.
So dogs are looking good. You know, I had a fairly tough quest, mostly not due to weather issues in the beginning, but just used to me, or because of me being a bonehead, I did some big rookie mess-ups out there this year, and, you know, this is my first race this year. I was trying to learn a little bit by from Dallas Seavey and not try to run the dogs so much in early season races and try to hold them back for the big ones, but realistically, I think I could have used the practice a little bit more. I was trying to race a bunch of younger three-year-old competitively with my older, you know, solid eight dogs. And most of those newer dogs obviously didn't make it to the finish line. I ended up dropping many of them due to, you know, either being tired or, you know, they had slight injuries, maybe a shoulder or wrist. They're all healed up now, thankfully. And I'm hoping by dropping them and them not going 1,000 miles in just 400 or 500 instead, that recovery will actually be beneficial in the long run. But the usual solid seven or eight that I've had the last couple of years that have been, you know, consistently doing quite well in all these races, they're the backbone of my team, you know, George, Jewel, Amigo, Cohiba, Rosie, Mojito. Stevie Ray was the only rookie this year that actually made it all the way to the end. He's a solid youngster, and I had Archie as well. You have, of course, Archie's brother and sister, Atlas and Gabby, and your team, Robert. You know how solid those guys are.
Oh, yes. Yeah, they do very well. Hugh, let's talk a little bit about the weather on the quest. There was a lot of talk about that all over the place, not only on social media, but in the newspapers and whatnot. You guys started out pretty dang cold there in Whitehorse, and as you worked your way towards the finish, it got warmer and warmer. Tell our folks about what it's like starting a race at 50 below or whatever it was, and then, of course, finishing it, what was it, about 30 degrees when you guys finally finished, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's, you know, spring weather in Alaska can be quite variable. Huge differences, especially once that sun gets cranked out here in another couple of weeks. We're gaining 7 minutes a day here. I'm from Tok, one of the coldest spots in Alaska, so 50 below, I'm used to that. Usually 50 below, though, I'm just trying to keep the cabin warm. I'm not running dogs. But the dogs are used to it, which I think was beneficial. I did a talk in Rapid City, South Dakota a few months ago, and they gave me a bunch of awesome winter gear as a sponsorship for coming out there and giving a talk to the folks there. And, man, I was comfortable at 40, 50 below, dude. I was, it was a little, claustrophobic being all covered up. All you see on my body are going to be my eyes and perhaps a little bit of my cheeks and nose. But I was feeling nice and comfy. If anything, at 50 below, what you're worried about is sweating, because that sweat, can freeze up on you and you can have issues with your feet or hands or what have you. I do have, my typical after quest numbness in a few of the fingers and one of my toes. Not severe frostbite, but it's like a severe frost nip, sort of like the tingle you feel when you get the Novocaine. If you're ever getting a cavity filled with the dentist. I am starting to feel the ramifications of racing so much every year. And all these miles are adding up in my body. And I see it in guys like Jeff and Martin and some of the other guys and Hans. I mean, it's just part of the game we play. It's called life, or Lance even. Unlike past years, I had major issues out there with my hands falling asleep and carpal tunnel issues. And while I'm here in Fairbanks this week, I'm going to have to go see a chiropractor and see if I can get my back tweaked a little bit. There's a vein that comes from the back left shoulder down to your front hand that has been affecting me the last couple of years. And cool thing about the quest is 40 miles just past Dawson, there's actually a lady named Sandy who is a chiropractor. So during the quest this year, I stopped there for about 4 or 5 hours, and she actually tweaked my back out. So my back actually felt great during the quest. Interesting fact about the cold and all that is that the people that were sick during the race primarily or predominantly were the handlers and the race officials and the veterinarians. The mushers who were out there on their own in the clean Arctic air actually performed well and didn't really, get that sick at all. It was all the humans that were clustered together waiting for us to come in at the checkpoints were the ones that were catching the viruses.
So tell us a little bit about the changes this year. It's the first year of the different format with the different stopping times at Dawson and, of course, some of the other areas down the trail. How did that affect you guys spending a day in Dawson versus a day and a half?
I definitely think it fairly much ruined the race for a lot of teams. I think a lot of teams didn't have that recovery they needed. I don't think the quest looked into the possibility of it being cold like that. And I think when you take for granted Mother Nature, she's going to get you. Lord knows I've known that through the years. The mushers had nothing to do with that decision. That was all the rules committee for the quest. I think they were just trying to, have an experiment, see how it worked out, but obviously it didn't work out that well at all. And I think everybody involved with the quest agreed after the race that they're going to try to change it back to the 36. Originally, I think they tried to do it because they wanted to have more rest mandatory for the mushers as well as the dogs after what happened with Brent last year and his concussion and all that. That being said, I think the musher that was the most embarrassed as well as insulted by this change was Brent Seth. He was not very happy that they did this because of him. I don't think Brent's the type of guy that wants to have any rule based on – I don't think any musher wants to have any rule based on their actions to see what's best for the race. And what's best for the race is not only the rest, that extra 12 hours is huge because, it's a lot later than the Iditarod turn, the mandatory. Iditarod, people are taking their mandatory sleep 300 miles in, not 400 or 500 miles. So that extra 12 hours is going to put a little bit more weight back on the dogs, and just the rest alone is going to help them out. But it's also Dawson City. And it was just not a good feeling to be rushed and not even have a chance to enjoy Dawson this year. And Dawson's the heart of the quest. And I'm just, hopefully the quest is going to rectify the situation immediately.
So you ended up finishing in fifth. You were in first place for quite a while, and as you said, you had quite a bit of issues early on with some of those younger dogs. How do you feel about that fifth-place finish? Is that pretty good for your team and the way that they looked coming into the finish line there?
Yeah, definitely. You know, I think I could have done better if I had a better run-rest schedule. It was pretty stupid. The bonehead move on my part, first of all, was load them down with these younger dogs that I had a more consistent run-rest schedule. And I was running low on snacks on some of those longer runs, and that slowed us down as too. I had to go at a more moderate pace, and I had the wrong runner plastic in a couple spots that really slowed me down on Birch Creek and another section of the trail where I should have had a different color instead of black. I had white and vice versa. So just dumb, you know, rookie mistakes. That being said, the teams that were in front of me are all awesome teams. I was really impressed with all of them. Not only, you know, Brent and Allen, but, you know, Ed Hopkins is a great musher, as well as Damon. And everybody wants to say Damon's a rookie, but Damon's been around the block. He's worked with top mushers, and he had a mid-sleevy team there. So it's a great field. One of the greatest Quest banquets I've ever been to. The finishing banquet is just awesome between the energy of Brent Sass and a lot of the awards were it was like a Lance Mackey love fest there at the end. We were all wanted to let Lance know that he might not be the dominant that he is. Nobody will ever be as dominant as he was there for those 4 years. But we all still respect the heck out of that guy, and he's like a brother to me, and I just treasure every moment I get to hang out with that guy, especially when it's on the trail. It's pretty tough being on the Quest Trail knowing he's out there and not being able to travel with him because, you know, we spent, you know, 5,000-7,000 miles together along the Quest and Iditarod. So I'm always wishing him the best. You never know. He's a tough dude. He's got a lot of issues with the cancer, but he's making it happen still. And for me, that's a guy like him is a greater role model than just somebody who wins the race. I mean, as far as dog mushing goes, usually the folks that are winning these races have been around a lot longer and have a lot more money and are way well more outfitted. And so I think they should win. So sometimes I think people need to look at dog mushing in a more objective way and realize musher's a winner if they can do it to the best of their abilities and have a nice-looking team at the end.
Right. So here we are, sort of the week and a half that leads up to Iditarod, and of course I want to get your opinion on the restart that they announced since you were out on the trail. What are your opinions of that? I know you're going to say, well, it's just a race, it's just a trail, I'm ready for it. But what do you think about the new race route with the different checkpoints and all?
I'm loving it. I mean, obviously we should have been here last year too, you know? So I'm definitely loving it. I've got nice, you know, a lot of my dogs go back to the Lester Earhart line, Canada River dogs. I'm excited to go see my friends in the different native villages. I think it's a more level playing field. We're all rookies in a way, getting to go through Huslia, getting to honor the greatest musher of all time, George Adler. It's special, and it's, you know, after last year, I was a little ambivalent about the Iditarod and what the Iditarod is all about anymore. So there's a lot of negative energy last year. But I think people are making it happen. And my hat's off to Mark Nordman and all the folks that are trying to figure this scene out with all the, you know, Mother Earth and the weather changes. I just hope all the mushers and the fans on the internet give respect to these people for going, you know, these guys are living this 24/7 now, figure out how to make this happen, because even as I'm talking to you outside here in Fairbanks, you know, it's still dicey even up this far north in Alaska as far as weather conditions. Been having a lot of snow melt, a lot of rain. But, you know, knowing Mark and knowing his outfit, these guys are going to get the job done, because they really are the heart of the Iditarod.
So with you in particular, you're in Fairbanks now. You're going to drive down here pretty much for the week of Iditarod, and then you have to turn right around and drive back up to Fairbanks, and then start on. You do the ceremonial on Saturday, then start on Monday. How does that affect anything at all, or does it?
You know me, man. I'm going past that. I'm having a get together at the Hampton Inn and Suites Sunday night before the race, where people can come out and that afternoon. I'm going to have the dogs there. They can come take some pics with the dogs. I'll have a little video I'll be showing as well. Just you know, it's a celebration. It's a sport. It's a race, competition, whatever. But the people that are doing this race year after year aren't doing it because they want to leave some type of legacy. They're doing it because they love the Iditarod and they love Alaska and their dogs especially. So I'm going to be doing that on Sunday, you know, to drive. But I'm the Gypsy Musher. It's what I do. I'm constantly moving around. I'll do a couple long runs here this week in Fairbanks, maybe early next week, just to get the dogs used to running at, you know, the freezing weather, you know, right around 30 degrees is what probably this race is going to end up averaging. Right now, so far since the Quest, though, people would think I'd be sitting back on a couch recovering. I did that a little bit yesterday watching the Oscars, but I've pretty much been running the dogs every day. Not that far, just about an hour or so. But where I stay at my buddy Sam Harrell's here on Farmers Loop in Fairbanks, it's the, you know, one of the three main sprint racing tracks in Alaska. It's the Open North American track, the Jeff Studer Race Grounds. So I've got really nice conditions here to run my dogs on. I just don't think they really need to be run that far in this weather. But they do need the conditioning, and it's good for their metabolism, keeps them eating good and all that stuff. That'll be a major component of this race, will be not necessarily the athleticism of the dogs, but the teams that have dogs that are eating good and clean stools and all that.
Right. So I know that you've probably seen the pictures of the Iron Dog race, and that covers quite a bit of the same route of the normal Iditarod when it leaves from Anchorage. What do you think about those pictures and that trail out there, especially with those, I don't know, 500, 700-pound machines out there?
I don't know. Well, I just think the Iditarod learned from last year, and it doesn't look like the Iron Dog did. I feel sorry for the snow machines. At least the snow machines aren't going to, you know, I don't know, maybe some of the snow machines are human-like to their owners, but I don't think they're going to suffer like maybe a dog would a little bit. I'm on a radio show right now, and I'm sitting here, and guess who just opened the door? One of the top Iditaroders. Let me see if I can turn my speakerphone on real quick, Robert. I got Aaron Burmeister here.
Okay.
Can you hear me, Robert?
Yes, go ahead.
Say hi, Aaron.
Hey, how are we doing, Robert? Aaron Burmeister.
Hey, Aaron, how are you? What's going on with you? Are you racing this year? And tell us a little about yourself.
Oh, well, it's my year this year. We're starting in my hometown and finishing my hometown. So it's my turn to win this and get it over with.
Very cool.
Yeah, Aaron's not only a musher, you know, he's one of the board member too, and he's one of the, you know, I when I moved here from Chicago, Aaron was one of my first bosses, even though we're both sort of tied in with Ramey over at Chena Marina. But Aaron and I have known each other, believe it or not, Aaron, it's going on 20 years
since,
now.
Since you first moved to Alaska.
And Aaron could tell you all my mess-ups over the years. Aaron used to bring me wood at my cabin out in the woods just to make sure I was doing okay, one of my rookie years.
Trying to keep him alive so that he wouldn't freeze to death. Make sure he had a chainsaw that worked to cut wood for himself.
Yeah, yeah. Clemmer's in town right now, by the way. Yeah. So, yeah, Aaron is also, you know, probably one of the predominant mushers from the coast. You know, he grew up in Nome. So that sounds like the coast is actually doing okay weather-wise right now. Yeah. But, you know, we're going to have issues out there, but all we have to say this year is at least we're not doing the Iron Dog.
That's right. It's a dog race, so we take it as it comes and go 1 mile at a time and hope for the best.
And wouldn't you agree that last year the dogs did a lot better than the humans?
Absolutely.
Physically?
Yep.
You still there, Robert?
Yes, I'm still here. Yeah.
Okay. Any more questions for Aaron? He's doing blood work too right now.
No, good meeting you on the show, Aaron, and good luck to you out there on the race.
You bet. You guys have a good one as well. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'll get there.
So Hugh, we have about 8-10 minutes left. Let's talk a little bit about the dogs. We talked about the perennial favorites there on your Quest team. What's it looking like on the Iditarod? Who's going to make up that team at least tentatively right now?
I think I've got 12 of the 14 from the Quest.
I've got a dog I'm borrowing from Josh Kadzow that was actually in Sonny Linder's team last year. And then a few other younger dogs that are, you know, going to be clean dogs. The beauty of this year's race, though, there's going to be a big chunk of this race that it's really not about the dogs knowing where they're going. It's just more about them knowing what they're doing. And so, like I said earlier, for me, it's all about run, rest, schedule, and trying to tone it down in the beginning of the race. And a lot of times I try to get out there in the beginning because I really don't like to travel with a million other teams. But sooner or later, you got to do it. You got to be a part of the pack and learn to be a part of the peloton and not think you're Lance Armstrong.
Right. And in this year's race, it's going to be quite a bit flatter than the first 300 miles or so of the original Iditarod. How does that come into play in terms of, getting your dogs ready to do that? It's a lot of river running, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't know, Aaron. What do you think? Is there a special type of dog for river running that would perform better, you think? You said a well-trained one. But sometimes, you got a marker. It's how you put your team together. You got to have a team that meshes together. I've got fairly small dogs compared to a guy like Ray Reddington, who's going to have bigger dogs. But for me, it's also just about, like I said earlier, dogs that are good eaters and have just a good attitude.
Right. So in finishing up, Hugh, let's talk a little bit about your spring school tour, which is coming up in May. When does that happen, and where are you going this year?
Well, as usual, I'll be going to Chicago, renting a vehicle, heading for the East Coast, and I'll be on the road from the end of April through the end of May. People can contact me, laughingguyskennel@hotmail.com, if they're interested in setting up a school talk, and once again, I'll be having Walter with me, my famous leader. He's done 12,000 mile races. Pretty amazing boy. How are the trails in the net? Is it good?
What's that?
Wow. Yeah, Aaron and I were just talking about trails. You know, with this weather, it's a little bit difficult to figure out where is a safer run to do. Aaron's in a great spot down there in Nanana. That's where Pete Kaiser's been training a lot of the top Iditaroders this year. They go from Nanana to Minto and out towards, it's actually right next to the Iditarod Trail. But realistically, I mean, it's so rock hard that it's going to be interesting just setting a snow hook out there.
Right.
In the Yukon Quest, we got to the last checkpoint in Two Rivers, and, you had to put a snow hook out on the front of your line to keep your line tight and keep the leaders out. And I put my hook into the ground, and it literally went about an inch down and hit like concrete. And I just looked at the head race official, Doug Grillo, and just laughed. I mean, because, you get up in the mountains or in the hills, and then there's tons of snow, like around, say, Dawson or something. So it's really hit hard this year in interior Alaska.
Right. Yeah, I was up there a couple of months ago, and there was hardly any snow at all in Fairbanks, and we had plenty down here. And I think that's reversing a little bit. We still have quite a bit, but it's melting very quickly. And I know a lot of the mushers down this way are trying to move up to the north to get those last few training runs in before Iditarod. But it's a mess down here. I know Junior Iditarod is up in the air right now, and of course they canceled the Rondi and other races as well. So it's not a good year for us dog mushers in South Central.
No, I think I'm going to start my own. Dog mushing realtor business for Toke.
There you go. You'll have more neighbors than you want it very quickly.
Yeah. We don't have the greatest trails. I do a lot of obviously highway training, sort of like the Denali Highway. I do it on the top of the world. Toke's the only place I know of right now that where it's not raining.
Right. All right, Hugh, well, I'll let you go. You got dog stuff to do there at the vet's office today. We'll talk when you get into town, okay?
All right, Robert, and just let everybody know that the Cat in the Hat will be there soon.
There you go. Hugh Neff, fifth-place finisher in the Yukon Quest this year, hoping to do very well in the Iditarod coming up in just about 2 weeks. We'll see you guys next time. Goodbye.